everybody. My name is Chris Hart, and I'm an alcoholic.
Sobriety date is March 25th of 06, and I was asked about 5 minutes before this meeting if I'd be the 15-minute speaker, so that's always a good thing. Never gives you too much time to think about it. You know, I started this journey 9 years ago, a beaten and broken man with no hope, and it's a completely different story today. Tonight's a pretty special night for me. 9 years ago, I had no hope, and, you know, tonight is my baby girl's first day of AA. And I want to take a second to thank everybody here at YPG. I always admired what you do here, and I want to thank you for keeping this thing alive and kicking so that when my daughter was ready, she had a place to go. So thank you for that. You know, this thing was probably the hardest thing I ever had to do. But once I made a commitment to step into the rooms of AA, I started to realize pretty early on, you know, that God had a plan for my life. And a lot of the guys that are in this room today were here when I got in the rooms and are still here today. And, you know, the people that have watched my recovery can vouch for the fact that it's an absolute miracle. We are all miracles here. When we decide to make a change in our own life and we make steps towards that change, amazing things begin to happen. God enters into our life. It tells us in the big book that you know, that these changes will take place and we won't even see it, but the people around us will see it first. And around 7 months of sobriety, things started to change for me. Didn't feel like it at the time. Things were still pretty rough. I mean, the consequences, the wreckage of my past caught up with me for a considerable amount of time, well into my sobriety. And just because I got sober, things weren't bright and shiny. You know, things got harder before they got better. But I kept following suggestion. I stayed close to my sponsor. I worked the steps, and, you know, things started to happen in my life. I was able to go back to school. I was able to graduate school. You're looking at a guy who dropped out in the eighth grade and never had plans to go back. And, you know, I talk to my daughter all the time about decisions. You know, you make a lot of good decisions, and there's a good chance that you'll be successful. You make a lot of bad decisions, and there's consequences for those decisions. You know, my consequences included jails, institutions, and damn near death. You know, and those are the three roads that that we have here, and we have a choice whether we're going to continue walking down that road or if we're going to make a change in our own life. And once we've done that, in my experience, people want to help a person who's trying to help themselves. And it really only takes a little bit of open-mindedness and a willingness and some honesty on our part to show the person next to us that we're willing to play, you know, willing to go through with this. You know, I started my journey in a halfway house, you know. And when I first got here, I didn't think this thing was going to work for me, to be quite honest with you. But I had no other options, you know. My family didn't want me around. I had couch surfed, and my friends didn't want me around. Most of them had kids by then, and it wasn't cool having a drunk passed out on their couch for days on end, you know. And, you know, a guy that I worked with, we were just talking about earlier, I had watched him enter the rooms about 2 years prior to me. And I saw the changes taking place in his life, and I was hurting so bad at that time that I was willing to do anything to get sober, and I thought that I was willing to do anything to get sober. And I made my way into the rooms. He introduced me around. I got a sponsor, but still was hanging on to my way, you know, and my way got me drunk 86 days later. But I kept the same sponsor, and I kept coming to meetings. You know, alcohol has a funny way of pushing us back in the rooms if we don't die first. And the consequences grew, this self-loathing grew, this self-hatred grew, until I couldn't stand what I was looking at when I looked at it in the mirror. And I woke up one day with a, I don't know if you want to call it a enlightenment or a moment of clarity. I looked at myself in the mirror and I said, there's got to be a better way to live. And I say all the time from the podium or from people, with people that I'm working with, that I never knew that a life like this existed. Because the way I was living life was normal to me. That's all I ever knew was drugs, alcohol, fighting, going to jail, you know, just, you, it runs the gamut. So when I started to see that you could have fun in sobriety, you know, when I started to see that things were starting to change, you know, my sponsor came to me one day after about a year of sobriety, and he said, Chris, you're an intelligent guy, why aren't you in school? And I said, no, I'm not a school kind of guy. You know, I only went to school for friends and for girls. That's the only thing school was good for, you know. And he planted a seed that day, and, you know, fortunately, the company that I was working for at the time, they took interest in what I was doing. They liked what I was doing, and they said, Chris, you know, we like you working here. But if you want to continue growing in the company, you're going to need to go to school and do what we do. And so I did. And I did. You know, I finished school, a two-year program, in about 16 months, and I was, you know, I was very nervous about doing that because at that time I was heading to AA and I was going full force, and I was actually scared about taking time away from my recovery. I worked with my sponsor extensively on it, and I'll tell you what, like I said, when God has a plan for your life, He makes things possible. He kept me just sane enough to where I could continue going to work, continue going to school, get enough AA to where I didn't lose my mind. And I made it through with honors and with all the stuff that, you know, when you put some effort into something, it's pretty amazing at what you can do. And so there I go. I went from, you know, doing construction work, mechanical construction work. I went into doing some service. And, you know, God always had a place for me. You know, the company that I was working for, back when the economy started going down and stuff, they started getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And wound up that there was six foremen. We went from 60 men out in the field to having six foremen and myself. And they didn't get rid of me, but I saw the writing on the wall. You know, not that they would have gotten rid of me, but I saw that, you know, things weren't headed in the right direction there. And other opportunities came my way. You know, my job up here is to give experience, strength, and hope. And, you know, I don't say this to brag or to boast. I just want to tell you what's possible in Alcoholics Anonymous. At the age of 40, at 5 years of sobriety, I was able to buy my own house. You know, and that's only because my working my step work through my sponsor, he sat me down one day and he goes, Chris, what do you absolutely want out of life? And I'm a pretty simple guy. I just said, you know, I don't want to have to worry about next month's bills. I want a place to be able to call my own, and I want a woman that's going to love me until the day I die. And he goes, Chris, that's doable. That's easy. You just continue doing what you're doing, and those things will materialize for you. And slowly but surely, through my fourth step, you know, he had me, through my amends process, you know, he had me do some things that I thought were totally crazy at the time, like pull my credit report. What the hell does that have to do with sobriety? You know, and I called him up one day just to throw a little story out there, and I had saved a little bit of money, and I had the day off, and I went to the Best Buy, and I saw this nice, beautiful TV. And I did what I was supposed to do. You know, whenever I had a bright idea, I would call my sponsor, and I said, "Hey, sponsor," I said, "I've got the money. I saw this TV, and it sure is looking nice." He says, "Man, that sounds like a good deal. You pay for it cash and no credit." And I was like, "Yep, yep." And he's like, he says, "Let me ask you one question." He goes, "Where do you stand on your financial events? What do you say to that?" I said, "I said I hadn't even started on them." And he goes, "Well, the way I see it, you're stealing from those people until you pay them back. You might want to take care of those before you start serving self." And it's a good thing for good sponsors. You know, he taught me a lot. He taught me everything I know about being a man, because by the time I got here, I was 34 years old when I got here, but all I was a grown-up child. I couldn't even take care of myself, much less my daughter, a relationship, or any of the friendships that I had. He taught me how to be a gentleman. He taught me how to look out for somebody else's welfare instead of my own. He taught me how to handle things. I watched men in the program, the men that I've looked up to, my grand sponsors and my sponsors, die with dignity, die with grace, and die sober. And thank God for old timers. Thank God for sponsors. Yeah. So when we pulled that credit report, you know, he had me do things like pay off hospital bills, and pay TECO, and pay DirecTV, and pay all the people that I had defaulted on over those years. Because remember, we had that conversation. He asked me what I wanted out of life. And I didn't see it at the time. But I systematically went through and I paid off every one of the creditors that I had defaulted on. I paid everybody back that I had stolen from, everybody that I had borrowed money from and never paid back. And when the time came that I was responsible enough, where I was ground enough to be able to buy my own home, I was able to qualify for a loan because I had cleaned up my credit, you know. My career path has also taken a turn. I'm no longer doing air conditioning or, you know, the things that I started out doing when I got here. A funny story is, through my sponsorship lineage, I started following a guy named Charlie Parker out of Texas, and he runs a primary purpose group, and I went up to Bill Wilson's house, me and my girlfriend, and we did a weekend on sponsorship with them, and you know, through his teachings, I decided to start a primary purpose group up at my house for my sponsorship lineage. So my sponsor and everybody that he sponsored and all my sponsees and everybody that they sponsored would meet at my house on Friday nights. And and we would go through the book line by line. We pulled out a 1935 dictionary and we'd look up words, you know, like agent and like any of the words that we thought we knew the meaning to, we would look up, because you'd be surprised at how different what the meanings were back in 1935. And through that meeting, my sponsor brought a guy in that I wound up sponsoring later. But, you know, through conversation, just casual conversation, I asked him what he did, and I go, you know, my second question was, how'd you get involved in doing something like that? And he goes, you know, I just got my foot in the door, you know. And his second question was, why are you interested? I go, well, hell, what are we talking about? He started talking. I'm like, hell yeah, I'm interested. And in a matter of 3 weeks, now you have to understand that I come from an extensive background. I was in prison by the time I was 18 years old. I've been on every form of probation, house arrest, and I've spent more years on some sort of supervision than off supervision. And I had my first interview on Wednesday, my second interview on Friday, and an offer letter that Friday afternoon. Then they did my background check, and they held on to that for 2 full weeks. So they saw everything. And by the time they got back with me 2 weeks later, I had already made it up in my mind. I didn't get it. And I wish I had more time to tell the complete and entire story, because it is absolutely amazing that how God works in your life. If you have your eyes open, you're living life and you're working as an agent of God. By the way, that means working in the behalf of another person. So if I'm an agent of God, I'm working in the behalf of God. I try to live my life as good as I possibly can these days, and I try to lead by example. And I would like to think that that's why when my daughter saw that she needed some help, she knew who to come to. I'm proud of you, baby girl, and I love you. I'm glad you're here. Thank you.